Good morning. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Thursday, the 20th of September. Dante Chinney is our guest, the first hour of our program, editor of Patchwork Nation. He writes weekly, sometimes more often, for the Wall Street Journal. And he has this very interesting project that we've been following ever since it started back in 2000, Patchwork Nation. And it's an examination of the different types of communities across the country. A recent piece in the Wall Street Journal caught our attention, who the 47% actually vote for. He writes, of all the news generated in Mitt Romney's comments from a fundraiser that surfaced on Monday, the most eye-catching element from the perspective of Patchwork Nation was how misguided the premise behind the comments was. It ignored some basic facts about the way people in different kinds of communities actually vote, and it seemed to fundamentally misunderstand a crucial piece of his base, the social conservatives. The 47% who don't pay taxes, presumably, Dante writes, he was speaking of less wealthy households. If you use income as your main divider of the 12 types of communities, the inverse of what he said is often true. It is the poorer counties that are the most reliably Republican, and in fact, Romney needs to help him win in November. We'll be welcoming phone calls for Dante during the course of this hour. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. You can also go to our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. We welcome your comments on all of those different forms. Dante, good morning. Thanks very much for being with us.
Good morning.
Nice to have you here. You've written extensively about this video that came out from that fundraiser. I find this very interesting that he may be discounting one of his base communities as a result of what he said, the poorer counties that are the most reliably Republican. Why is that?
Well, the thing that I found most astounding about it was, you know, his analysis of how people vote when he made that little speech was, you know, and this is going to sound odd, I guess, but it was almost Marxist in its nature. It was the idea that people just vote their economic interests. That's how everything gets done. And it's just not true. I mean, anybody who studies politics in America knows this is not true. The, you know, social conservatives that are a huge part of the GOP base, and I go to a lot of these communities, in Patrick Nation we call them evangelical epicenters, these are not wealthy places. These are places where a lot of people are struggling. But if you talk to them about the economy, they don't like what's happening with the economy. But to be honest, that's not really what ultimately moves their vote. What moves their vote is social and cultural issues. And as I wrote in the piece, the thing that's actually really astounding about this in some ways is that Romney, as a Mormon, should know this very well. Because, you know, there are a lot of Mormon communities when you go far out west in the country that, again, they're not terribly wealthy, but they are reliably Republican. And, you know, it's almost an insult to them to say, well, you know, I know you're just going to vote. I know that people who don't make a lot of money are just going to vote for Democrats because they just want handouts. You know, those people would, he's going to win their vote. He's going to win the vote of these people. But it's just a fundamental misunderstanding of who he really needs to turn out for him. You know, it's very interesting. I'm writing a piece today for the journal. But one of the most for the Wall Street Journal. But one of the most interesting things in their most recent poll was that when you look at voters households making $100,000 or more, Obama is leading those households by a wide margin, by double digits. And again, this idea that it's easy to understand the American electorate. Poor people vote for Democrats and rich people vote for Republicans. It's just not true.
You do ask the question in your piece in the journal, did Romney do damage with voters he will need in November with his fundraising speech? And you say, maybe.
Yeah, there is the way we break up the country in Patchwork Nation, there are a lot of kinds of smaller rural county, because there are a lot of those counties in the United States. And there's this type of county that we call service worker centers. And I think actually the other group that might fall into this that might be affected would be these counties that we call emptying nests. And actually, you guys up in Wisconsin have quite a bit of both those things, both those types of county. And the service worker centers in particular, those places have really been walloped by the recession, but they have long-term structural economic problems that have kept them poor, relatively poor, and with relatively high unemployment, even through the good times. The difference between them and the evangelical epicenters, which have experienced this, evangelical communities, which have experienced some of the same economic problems, is they don't have the deeply ingrained social conservative element to them. So there are these counties around the country that are poor. They're not very well off. They vote reliably Republican on social cultural issues. And then there are these other communities that vote that are poor, not very well off. They vote Republican for slightly different reasons. If they don't have, without that evangelical kind of backbone holding the vote there, their vote does tend to swing a bit more. And those places, these service worker centers in particular, they're really true, in some ways I view them as true populist areas. So these are areas where they just don't like elites, period. They don't like government because government, obviously, they feel the government has ignores them and it's making things worse, not better. But they also really don't like big business. They really despise big business, and they don't like the rich. And what Romney said is going to hurt him in some of those places. And he does need, my guess is he'll probably win them, because Republicans usually win them. But he probably needs to win them by 7 or 8 or 9 points. And I wonder if what he said is going to knock his margin down to 2 or 3 percentage points. I think it'll be tough.
And when you write, Dante, that those small-town service worker centers have voted with the GOP in each of the last 3 presidential races, am I hearing you say it is because of the social cultural issues they did so?
Yeah, I mean, they tend to vote Republican. They tend to vote Republican because they don't like government. I mean, they really don't. They don't. They don't trust government. They think government really isn't looking out for them. And you know, so the Republican anti-government message works to great effect in those places. The problem is, Romney has had a kind of a problem connecting with these voters to begin with, because these are the kind of voters where if you say Bain Capital and talk about Bain Capital, they understand. They have an understanding about what they think Bain Capital and companies like it do, and they don't like it. So he's had a hard time connecting with them in the first place. And then when you come out and say, I'm just going to ignore people that make that, you know, basically don't pay income taxes, you know, there are going to be voters in these places that are just going to roll their eyes at that. And, you know, are they going to go out and vote for Obama? I don't know. But it's going to be a heck of a lot harder to go out and vote for Romney if you feel he doesn't really care about you.
And how do you explain those moneyed burbs, those people who are making over $100,000, that are voting for Obama?
Well, it's just, it's a fundamental misunderstanding of how, to say that people just vote on economics. If that was really the case, then Romney would win, right? Because there's 47% that would vote for Obama. That I assume that means there's 53% that should vote for him. That's not the way the vote works. There are a lot of things that move voters, particularly voters in those suburban areas that tend to be moderate, right? They tend to care a lot about education. A lot of them have kids in school. You know, one way to think of it, and we've mapped this before, is like look at where like the Whole Foods like stores are located. Now, Whole Foods is this chain of like kind of, you know, organic grocery stores that are very expensive.
Yes.
You know? Well, they're pricey. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they tend to be located in these wealthy suburban areas. They are also, when you get into them, I mean, they're very, I mean, if they have not the owner of the store, but the stores themselves are very, in some ways, what you'd say liberal. You know, the register, there are copies of the Utney Reader that you can buy. And it's all about, like, sustainable farming. Where's your food come from? And we have to help these poor farmers in other parts of the world. You know, those are not Republican. They're not, like, deep Republican ideas or like I say, things for sale in those places. It just goes to show that, you know, even in those suburban areas, too, it's like there are more things than economics that determine your vote. A lot of it is about how they feel about social issues, and they don't like Republican stances on abortion or gun control. And they're not really sure how they feel about, necessarily, in those places, shrinking government as much as Mitt Romney is. I mean, you can win the vote there by saying, you can win some votes there by saying government's out of hand, but at the same time, you can't go and say, like, when we're going to cut the Department of Education, those places will say, no, you're not. We don't want that.
Mm-hmm. You also write, I'm not sure if it's in the same piece or another piece, about the high public sector unemployment that could be challenging for Republicans. You mentioned the Fraternal Order of Police, who had favored Republicans, announcing they would not support anyone for president this year. How substantial have those losses been, and break down the voting on this?
They've been pretty substantial in terms of, look, when you have the losses we've had in the economy or since, you know, in the recession, what happens is, and you know, you have foreclosure problems, and you know what these things do is they start hitting at the local tax base. So suddenly there's less money for the city or the county to hire teachers or firemen or police officers. They've got to lay people off. And that has hit particularly, again, in some of these smaller service worker center communities where there just aren't a lot of other jobs because they're small towns and they've lost a lot of small manufacturing. So when you start hitting them where the public sector lives, you're taking away some of their best-paying jobs. And there is a question. There is a question, you know, when you talk about we're going to just cut government, you know, we need to cut government, there is a question I have as to how that's going to play in some of these places because, you know, they've lived through a lot of government cuts already. And, you know, it's kind of weird. Everybody kind of wants government to be smaller, and they want to cut government unless it's the thing that they want, right? And then nobody, people are less interested in cutting government when it's something that they have. And in those places, you know, it's really hit all around the country, but in those small town places, you talk about cutting government more, you know, they see that as a problem.
The biggest loss of public sector jobs, you write, Latino-heavy immigration nation companies.
Yeah, and those are down along the south. Those are down in the southwest. And, you know, that's in part because those places really got slammed by foreclosures. The southwest of Arizona really took a beating. California took a beating. And Colorado really kind of took something of a beating. And there are some of those counties also in Florida. And again, what does that mean? It means fewer property taxes coming in. It means cuts to services in those places. And the problem that Romney has in those places to begin with is he obviously has a problem with Latinos. I think, you know, in terms of polling data has shown that repeatedly for Mitt Romney. And this is just, you know, is it enough where it's like, oh, and that means he's not going to win any of those counties? No, but it's enough to maybe throw a few percentage points the other way, and that's a problem. I mean, you know, I think that what everybody has to keep in mind is it's not necessarily about whether you win or lose a specific county, right? Because it's really about whether you win or lose a specific state. And whether or not you win or lose a specific state is about how much you win or lose counties by. So, you know, it's about whether or not Barack Obama gets enough out of Milwaukee in Wisconsin,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And then what happens in the burbs that ring Milwaukee, and is it enough to kind of, because actually your burbs up there, your moneyed burbs do tend to be a little more conservative. And whether Mitt Romney can do enough to kind of eat into Obama's margins in Milwaukee. That's really, and those kinds of things determine the state. And, of course, obviously you have Dane where you are, where University of Wisconsin is. And that's another, it's not a question of whether Obama's going to win Dane County. He's going to win Dane County. The question is, what does he win it by?
Right. And we're seeing polls this week that seem to show that the president is widening his lead against Mitt Romney. Is that indeed because, and in places like Wisconsin and Ohio, which have been states that Romney could win, when you break it down by counties, is it because of public sector workers? Is it the service center towns? Is it rural areas? What is it?
Well, we'd have to get inside those numbers and really get a good look at it. Now, I have access to the Journal's data. So the Marist data, the NBC Wall Street Journal state polling data last week was interesting to me in that in Ohio, Obama was doing quite well on the eastern side of the state. And that's not just Cleveland. There's a lot of poorer kind of rural counties in the eastern side of the state. And I think that's got to be troubling for Romney because he needs to do better in those places. Wisconsin, that poll that came out yesterday, I can't believe that's actually really accurate. I can't believe that Obama actually leads by 14 points, which would be truly astounding.
A lot of people looked at that and said, what?
I don't think that's really right. And I think that, you know, but I think that that really comes out to still a big bump there. I think Ohio, obviously, you know, Romney has to have Ohio. He has to have it. I mean, I just don't. It's really, really, really difficult for him to win without Ohio. And Florida is just a must. If he doesn't have Florida, I think the election's over. But Wisconsin, the thought was that, you know, Romney could do better in Wisconsin after he picked up Paul Ryan and put him on the ticket. And I don't know. I mean, I know some people who are Democratic strategists here who I talk to who say that they thought that Wisconsin was in play, but they weren't really sure about it. That was before this latest round of polls came out. And I'm curious. I'd love to get those Wisconsin numbers and get inside of them. I just haven't had it. I don't have a way to do that. I need somebody to give me the actual numbers so I can break them down.
All right. Well, maybe we can help with that.
That would be great.
All right. We'll see what we can do, Dante. We're going to welcome phone calls. We have many of them already. Dante Chinney, editor of Patchwork Nation, is our guest this first hour of the program. He's written some very interesting pieces lately about this 47% and breaking those people down by community and discovering that it would behoove the Romney campaign to look at particularly those poorer counties that are the most reliably Republican. They're not Democratic counties, and he'll need to woo them in order to win in November. So he breaks all these counties down and looks at where they're going and what messages are resonating and which ones are not in those community groups. Dante is a fine journalist. He is creator of the multimedia project Patchwork Nation. He writes frequently for the Wall Street Journal, and he is our guest this hour. One line is open if you'd like to get it, 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. The Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show. I do want to tell you that today would have been the 100th anniversary of the birth of Frank Zeidler, the mayor of Milwaukee for 12 years, from 1948 to 1960. He is a much beloved figure in this community, and there will be an anniversary of his birth lecture tonight that will be presented by his daughter, Jean Zeidler, who was mayor of Williamsburg, Virginia, for a number of years. I'll be moderating that. It should be a lovely evening, and it will be at the Milwaukee Public Library Centennial Hall on North 8th Street. Here in Milwaukee, it will be tonight at 7 o'clock, and it's absolutely free for those of you who enjoy Milwaukee's rich history, political history. That's the place to be tonight. Phone calls in a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We go to your phone calls. Mary in Wauwatosa, our first caller. Hi, Mary.
Good morning.
Hi.
I'm calling because I would hope that Political Fact or whatever would really look at that 47%. I am a senior. I've been retired for 14 years, and I paid Wisconsin income tax. I paid federal income tax, and I do not have a large income coming in. So I don't know where Mr. Romney is coming from. And also, all the seniors, every one of them, is getting money off of the government, Social Security and Medicare, and that is my peer group. I would also wish that Mr. Romney and his friends would go and spend a week in the inner city and see what the problems are, and then perhaps he would not be so condemning of people that are without means.
Thank you, Mary, for the call. Do you break down seniors communities as one of your groups, Dante?
We have a group that is primarily made of people, or not primarily, but as large pockets of population. They're 55 and over. That we call those emptying nests. Actually, we have quite a few of them in Wisconsin. And as I said, along with the service worker centers, I thought that they would be a group that might really kind of take some umbrage at what was said. And that was, you know, that was really, I wrote that piece on really Monday night as I was kind of just looking at the numbers and saying, like, you know, this doesn't make sense with what I see and the data that I see and the places I go and the people I talk to. This is just wrong. But since then, there's been a lot of analysis, again, of what the caller was just saying, of just who the 47% are. And, you know, of course, there are a lot of elderly in there, and there are a lot of veterans in there, which makes me wonder also about, and service workers, which makes me wonder also somewhat about these military communities around the country. I think they also could take a little bit of umbrage at what was said. And I think the hardest thing for Mr. Romney is this, you know, look, he said this on tape. And so he couldn't really, everybody was kind of shocked that he stood by the comments when he came out later. He really has no choice at this point. I mean, he can't come out and say, oh, that stuff I said, I didn't mean that. He has to stand by it. So the problem is he has to keep reiterating this thing. And I think it's extremely problematic for him.
Mm-hmm. So there's no way for him to extricate himself? Could he go to some of these communities that he may have offended and have large rallies? Would that help?
I mean, he could try. The problem is that the Romney rallies, and I've been to several of them. They're not big energy things. And the other thing is the way he could really kind of do it would be to try to convene, in my mind anyway, would be to go to some place and convene, or go to some diners and talk to some people and try to convene a group or some kind of group of people that he could chat with about it. The problem is he doesn't do very well in those settings. That's not, as a candidate, that's not the kind of setting that works best for him.
Thanks, Mary, for your call. We go to John in Eagle River. Hi, John.
Yeah, it was interesting listening to Rahmi's wife saying how, in defense of her husband, that they didn't really disdain poor people. My experience is that everybody disdains poor people, Republicans, Democrats, even poor people disdain poor people. Anyway, I'd like your comments on that. But my real question is whether or not in a county like Vadas County up here, which is decidedly Republican, whether the Democratic Party wouldn't go out and campaign very heavily for Obama just because they don't want to rile up the base for Romney. Does that make any sense?
Honestly, that does make a lot of sense. There are places, you know, there are different strategies that campaigns use in different places. In some places, you want to energize your people and get them out and try to win the place. And the other place, you really just kind of want to drive down. Again, this is about margins. It's about what they, you know, how much they win by. What's your county again? I'm sorry.
Vilas.
Where's I know. Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. I know where you are. Yeah.
North Central.
Yeah. You're way up there. Yeah. And I think again. Yeah. I think you're right. That is the kind of county where the best strategy I think is that the Obama campaign would look at it would be to just, you know, do what they can. Now I wouldn't be surprised if you got hit with negative ads. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if you got hit by a lot of negative ads about Mitt Romney if the Obama people felt that that was an area where they just wanted to drive down turnout for Mr. Romney. It wouldn't shock me. Oh, and the other thing, your comment about the poor, that's an excellent comment. It really is. The idea that, you know, the idea that there's a lot of disdain for the poor in America, I think you really hit on something there. It's, you know, one of the interesting things is when I go to these communities and I see counties and I see cities that are not wealthy. They're not wealthy places that nobody is really doing terribly well. Even when the town isn't doing terribly well and the people in the town would be on the lower end of the income scale, what they do is look at people who are below them on the income scale and talk about how, those people over there, you know, what you hear a lot of times is they don't work hard enough, or what are we going to do about those people over there? And it's just a natural, I think, sometimes human instinct to try to create a pecking order in your head and put yourself, if not at the top of it, then at least put somebody else beneath you so that you're not at the bottom of it. I completely agree with you. And I think it's a real problem because it's sad, and I see it too much when I'm out there.
Mm-hmm. It's also true, I think John is on to an important point. We have Jonathan Kozel with us next hour, and I've read a good chunk of Fire in the Ashes, his latest book. He's been reporting on homeless families and people in shelters, children, and what happens to them for almost 50 years now. And you read it and you weep because you realize that nobody's paying attention to these people who are desperately poor. And there are so many of the people. And it's just as though, you know, a passing reference every now and then, but no real deep policy suggestions or concern.
It's really, and that's kind of actually what's astonishing about the 47% comment and really about the campaign in general, is that everybody talks about getting the middle class back on its feet and doing what they can for the middle class, but the idea of doing something for the poor has really been lost. And I think it's been lost, at least for the time being, because things are so hard that they feel that first we have to get the middle class back on its feet. But I do think that really over the past 20 years, there's been less and less discussion about what we do about poverty in America, and it's really a shame. The thing that's interesting about the 47% is, it's one thing to say, I'm not going to do something for the poor. I mean, I don't think it's a good thing to say, obviously, but it's another thing to grow the group to 47%, which is half the population of the country, and say, it's basically expanding the group of people that you say you're not going to care about. And it's bad that we don't care about the people on the bottom right now, but it's almost expanding it to half the population is crazy.
Well, it's not as though the Democrats have been saying much about it either.
They have not. That's absolutely true. This was a cause for the Democrats for a long time. They found that it's a heck of a lot better for them politically to just talk about the middle class.
That's right.
Who speaks for the poor? It's an excellent point.
Who speaks for the poor? Nobody these days. John, thanks very much for your call. Let's go to Hugh in Milwaukee. Hello.
Hi. One of the things you really haven't mentioned is race. And I think this is one of the big differences. Obama addressed at the convention, and that is a State of the Union speech, talks about how we all should play by the same rules. Yet it's Obama and the Democrats who are particularly strong at preventing us from playing by the same rules with affirmative action. This affects poor whites enormously. They don't get the jobs. They don't get in the universities. The rich whites, they'll have their kids in universities, and they're not worried about jobs. The rich whites are the ones who vote Democrat and who were liberal. The big corporations that the NPR folk like to criticize, they are the ones who supported La Raza. They are the ones who go to the Supreme Court and defend affirmative action. It's the military-industrial complex, along with the academia complex, that supports these different rules, depending on race and ethnic, who favors all this immigration, and which destroys jobs for American citizens.
Dante,
it's an interesting point. I think that it is true that the Democratic Party, I think, has definitely made more of an effort to reach out to minority voters and to make minority voters a huge part of their base. They see that as a group they need to stand up for. And I don't think it's purely politics. I think they feel it's a group they need to stand up for, in part because they feel it fits with party principle. I don't know if I agree with everything you say about affirmative action. I think the bigger problem when you talk about poor whites, as you say in America, is it's not that they're not getting into college because of affirmative action. It's that the problem is the economic situation on the ground where a lot of poor whites live is the situations they come from, and actually it's true of poor black families as well. Getting off to go to college is a tough sell in a lot of places. On immigration, look, it's an interesting argument to have. I do think it's really true, and I think Democrats have to be honest about this, that, look, places where you have a big influx of immigrants, wages do tend to drop. That's true. I've looked at when you look at the numbers, that's true. You know, that the question is whether that's a short-term thing or a long-term thing. I mean, when we have less of this now because immigration is actually illegal. Immigration has slowed, and particularly in the Southwest as the economy has gotten not so good. When you have an influx of workers who will work for a lower wage, it's going to drive wages down. I think that's true, but I don't know if the answer to that is to say that we can't have immigrants. It's the story of the United States. I mean, the immigrants coming here, and my grandfather was an immigrant, and I'm sure when he arrived, people said the same thing about him, and I think they were probably right in that he did work for less money than people who had been here a long time. The hope is that over time, those people become, and those families become part of the American fabric, and their wages rise, and everybody's wages rise. But I think that in some ways, what you're saying is poor whites have taken a disproportionate hit. I don't know if I would really say that's true. I'd say the poor have taken a disproportionate hit over what's happened. And I think the stuff you're talking about with affirmative action, and I don't think it's really made – you can do it by looking at the numbers. It hasn't been like affirmative action has suddenly taken the African-American poor and lifted them into wealth. The numbers just don't suggest that.
Dante Chinney is our guest this hour, editor of Patchwork Nation. We're talking again about the 47% and those people who are in that 47% who would be Republican voters, and breaking down the communities, which Dante has done so well. I love the fact he knows this country so well. He knows exactly where Vilas County is in Wisconsin. It's pretty remarkable. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. And you can go to the Facebook page as well, which is the Kathleen Dunn Show. You talk about, and this was in conjunction with the public sector job losses, but let me go beyond that for a moment. In the Great Lakes area will hurt Romney and Ryan as the campaign focuses on austerity and fiscal belt tightening, which certainly has been a big part of the campaign message and resonated with many people until fairly recently. Who else would find that message of belt tightening, austerity troublesome? What other groups?
Well, I think the people who are going to find the austerity message troubling are, it's interesting that it's a really interesting time to have the discussion about we have to trim government and there are too many people who are freeloaders, which is really some of what's being said here. When people can't find work, I do think that generally in American politics, it's a lot easier to point at the poor, the people without a lot of money as the problem when everybody's doing better. I think that one of the problems that the Romney campaign is going to have across all these community types and across the country in general is this is a tough time to be talking. It's fine to talk about we've got to get the budget deficit in line, but it's like, we're going to have to do that by eliminating a lot of programs that take care of people when people are really in need right now. That's a tough thing to do. The inner cities are never going to vote for Romney. He's right about. I mean, if you were to take his 47% comment and switch it and say, look, there are a lot of people in big cities in America. I'm never going to reach them. I would never say it's the right thing for a candidate to say, so I'm not going to try. But he would be right about that. I mean, he's going to lose the big cities by a wide margin. And I think the austerity talk is not going to help him in those places. I think that's definitely true. But I also think the austerity talk, it's not just that you're losing jobs, but like if you live in a middle-class suburb, and you're watching, you're watching your city government get a lot of cuts, or you're watching the schools where your kids are take a lot of cuts, and then somebody says they're going to cut education. I don't know. That's a tough message. That's a really tough message, and I don't think it plays very well.
Kathy in Green Bay, hi.
Hello?
Yes, Kathy, go ahead.
I'm a tax preparer. I'm a senior. I'm a small business owner. I'm a homeowner. And so I'm Romney's demographic. I'm a conservative by nature. There was an interesting comment that people that earn over $100,000 generally favor Obama, and I'd like your guest's comment on that. But besides that, this 47% number came from IRS data from 2009, in which 47% of tax returns filed paid no income tax. It's not 47% of the population. So if in 2009 you had $70,000 of household income and you put in a new furnace and got a $1,500 tax credit,
right,
and you had two children under the age of 17, you probably paid no federal income taxes. But they're hardly victims,
yeah, right,
or poor people and so on and so on. So I'd like to have your guest comment on that, please.
I think that's an excellent point. I think that's the problem. I mean, it's the median household income in the United States is $50,000. That means half the population makes less than that. I think the idea of this actually somewhat ties into this idea of what middle class is in the United States, which I find this debate, and both parties are complicit in this, by the way. The debate of what middle class is in this country has gotten—it's ludicrous. The idea that if you make $200,000 a year, you're middle class. Look, I know there are geographic differences, and housing costs more in some places, cost of living is higher in some places. But look, $200,000—you're in the top 3 or 4% of households in the country. You're not middle class. I'm sorry, you're not. I mean, that's just the facts. Okay, So the idea that like this class of people that didn't pay income taxes would bump up to 70,000 is not at all surprising. I mean, I think somebody else was saying, if you had like three kids and you were in the mid-50s in terms of income and everything else being equal without any tax credits or anything like that, you probably didn't pay any income tax. It's not right. The other thing the other thing that I think is crazy about it is, like, when you say people don't pay taxes, everybody pays taxes all the time, as Republicans are generally happy to point out about how every dollar gets taxed several times, and you pay sales tax, and you pay property tax. And all these people paid, if you had a job and you were above, I think, what, $20,000, you paid the payroll tax. So actually, you were paying taxes. Look, whether or not Romney really believes this, I have no idea. This may have just been something he said in front of a group of donors, and I don't think Romney's a stupid guy. I think he's obviously a pretty bright guy. He may know all this, but the problem is he said it on tapes, and now he's had to reiterate it several times.
Yeah.
So whether or not he actually believes it is almost irrelevant at this point. He's not only said it, he's reconfirmed it, he's reiterated it several times.
Let's go to
the point.
I'm sorry. No, go ahead.
And the point the caller made about the people making over $100,000 a year, it's just that, look, you know, people don't just vote on economic interest. And, you know, it's completely possible. Here's the thing. You know, maybe people vote sometimes for the person they think is the best for the country, regardless of their economic interest. I mean, it's just a crazy idea. But maybe sometimes people actually look at the state of the country and look at the two people who are running and make a decision that isn't about their economic interest. That certainly happens on the lower end of the income scale. I think it happens in the higher end of the income scale as well.
Hmm. Martha in Duluth, hi.
Hi. I'd like to address why Ryan hasn't helped Romney. And I think by being on the national stage, people in Wisconsin and elsewhere got a good look at Ryan and what he really stands for and how severe he is in terms of policies. When you start off by addressing the Republican convention and lying several instances and media pick it up all over the country, that's not a good start. I mean, he even lied about his marathon time by an hour, which is not very smart. But I think really more important is, let's just face the fact. I mean, Romney is not presidential material. When you look at his background, he made a disaster out of Massachusetts, certainly didn't improve it. Let's give him that. It is well known by people who really don't have an axe to grind, but they have said that when he did his Olympic stint, he made it sound far worse than it really was, simply to emerge as a hero. And let's face the fact that Bain simply made him very, very rich at the expense of a whole lot of heartbreak.
All right, Martha, thanks very much for your call. We have a lot of calls coming in. I'd like for you to center in on the Paul Ryan comments and if the addition of Ryan has helped with any of those communities. He's from one of those really service worker counties that's faced...
Right.
Faced bad unemployment and the closing of plants. Has he helped at all with those communities?
The polls haven't shown it yet. Now, the latest NBC Journal poll that just came out. I'll have the breakdown next week by the Patrick Nation type, so I'll be able to see. But you know, the early indications were in Florida that he could actually help him. They thought with the elderly. I never thought those numbers were real. I thought that people just haven't really thought about it yet, because that would be a remarkable shift from every other poll on those issues that I ever would have seen in my life. I would say about Ryan the ready for prime time thing. You know, this is a good chance for Ryan. I think he's probably learned a few things in this VP run. And you know, if Romney wins, he will have some time to serve as vice president, and then, you know, obviously he wouldn't be even thinking of running until 2020. But say Romney doesn't win, you know, is he better set for 2016? I think he's probably better set for 2016 in terms of he's learned a little something, and he may learn that what he has to do on some of his stances on issues, which I do think are hurting him. But the other thing is, you know, the caller mentioned the line about the marathon time. You know, I know that sounds silly to some people, but that's a... For some people, it's the things like that, little things like that, that they feel are real giveaways about character, which everybody likes to talk about, character issues. Like, well, why would you lie about your marathon time? He's had, you know, it's 4 years is a long time, and if Romney doesn't win, Ryan can come back in 2016 and I think take a run, and hopefully, I think from his perspective, he'll have learned some things that will serve him well. Does he really help Romney at all in terms of winning? Look, when Romney chose him, I had no idea what he was doing. I really didn't. I didn't understand the pick. It made no sense to me. I didn't see what he would have brought Romney. It really didn't make any sense to me, and I have not changed my point of view on that. I don't understand.
Interesting. Martha, thanks so much for your call. We'll take more of them in a moment. Dante Chinney is our guest this hour, creator of the multimedia project Patchwork Nation. You can read him frequently in the Wall Street Journal, where he writes about this election and how the various community groups that he has written about extensively, the reasons that they are leaning one way or the other, and the circumstances in 2012 that would make them do just that. So we'll go to more phone calls momentarily. One line open now, 800-486-8655 is the number. The email is talk@WPR.org, or you can leave messages on our Facebook page, The Kathleen Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hour two of our program today, Jonathan Kozel, who for nearly 50 years has pricked the conscience of his readers by laying bare the savage inequalities inflicted upon children who were born to poverty within a wealthy nation. And the book that he has out now is the result of interviews, friendships he's had with many of these children over the past 25 years. The book is Fire in the Ashes, 25 Years Among the Poorest Children in America. So let's go back to phone calls. Ann in Kaukauna. Hi, Ann.
Hi.
Hi.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I just have some questions about agriculture. I got engaged and I'm marrying a farmer, and I'm having a lot of conversations with him and his friends, and they all seem like staunch Republicans. And after looking at kind of the history of Romney and what's going on with Ryan and his holding up of the farm bill and different cuts they're looking to make to MILC payments and just different cuts to subsidies in general, I have a hard time understanding that. do you have any feedback at all about, you know, agriculture and why you feel like so many farmers are Republicans, or just any opinions you have about kind of where Romney and Ryan are standing? And although what they vote on and what they're proposing seems quite anti, you know, helping the farmers, especially with the drought and different things like that. I don't know if you could just speak to that for a moment.
Thanks. It's a good question. I think one thing that drives, I think a couple things drive, because it is true, we have a type called Tractor Country and Patrick Nation that is extremely conservative, votes Republican extremely reliably. And why is that? I think it's largely because of social issues and cultural issues. I think that's part of it. The other thing, you know, again, I do think that people don't always vote economically what's best for them. The other thing I would say is I think that the Democratic Party is viewed, and I think perhaps rightly in some ways, as the party of urban America. And it's the party of the cities, and the party, and it wants to be the party of the suburbs. And I think when you get out to more rural places, they view that as, you know, I don't want my federal money going to help, just help people in the inner cities. And I think that, you know, that's one way of looking at it. And then I think the other thing is, again, it's just the social cultural issues. I would guess, I don't know you or your husband's friends. But mine, I would guess, is they're probably, in terms of social cultural issues, probably fairly conservative. Is that safe to say?
I think that's fair.
Yeah, I mean, so when you get the things like that, I mean, you know, Tom Frank wrote this book a couple years ago called What's the Matter with Kansas, and it's a good book, but there's a real problem with it, and it's the idea that why are all these people in Kansas voting against their economic interests? It's like, well, because that's not what motivates their vote. You know, for a lot of these people, it's the cultural and social issues that matter the most, because money is money. But when you come down to right and wrong, you know, what's right and what's wrong, that matters more.
Yeah, definitely. I think I agree with you, where you get these feelings of the candidates and, you know, everyone had that idea of, you know, you can have a beer with President Bush, and personally, I don't feel the need to be able to have a beer with someone that's going to run our country. But yeah, it's shocking to me to see, you know, Romney in what was it, 94, he basically wanted to eliminate the Department of Agriculture and, you know, proposed that. And it was, you know, his history is just so, it seems like, anti-support of agriculture. And
right.
And then with Ryan, you know, I think a lot of people, and I know Obama's really been making a stand for him, saying he's one of, you know, the people that are holding up this farm bill to give relief to all of the farmers that are suffering from the drought. And it just seems so, they're so far apart, it seems like, from where the reality of farming is in Wisconsin, especially after the drought, or even across the country, to where these candidates actually stand on the issues.
Right, right. Yeah, that's, you know, it's obviously how you feel, you know, where you stand on this stuff. You should raise your concerns with them and see if you can convince them of your point of view.
You'll have some great conversations, I'm sure,
right,
if everybody's civil. Thanks, Ann, for the call. The other question I wanted to ask you is, when you look at the largely suburban moneyed burbs that have gone Democratic in every election since 2000, Obama winning those counties by double digits in 2008, of course, the big cities came out for him in large numbers in 2008. The other question that we have to ask is, Republicans tend to be very reliable voters, even though Romney may be losing some of them. You have to also ask the question, what about the people in those reliably Democratic counties? How enthused are they this go around?
I think it's a good question. You know, the polling data now, what generally happens is people start talking about registered voters, and then as you get closer to the election, you switch to likely voters.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And there's all sorts of polling models for what a likely voter is. But a lot of it is about enthusiasm. The thing that I think for the Obama campaign has probably been a very hopeful sign in recent polls, and I think this is true of almost all polls, is they have gotten much more enthused in the last in recent polls, and they weren't really tuned in for a while. And maybe that's because there wasn't a primary on their side; there was no real fight. But they've begun to tune in, and you know that's probably makes them feel a lot better. I do think that one of the real problems that the Obama campaign may have is going to be with younger voters. I really do think that there was younger voters kind of tune in, tune out. You know, they've got a lot of them. They've got a lot going on in their lives, and a lot of them aren't paying huge amounts of taxes yet, so they're not really focused on government issues so much. It's around things like abortion and gun control, and they tend to be more social issue voters as well. In 2008, there was really a feeling that there was something historic going on, and they got very enthused and excited and involved in the campaign. Early on, anyway, now I haven't looked at the numbers recently, but it's been hard to get them engaged. And actually, you know, where you guys are in Dane, right? You're in Madison.
Actually, we're in Milwaukee, but our headquarters
are in Madison.
Sorry. Yes. No, that's right.
But, you know, I think it's going to be a real test. I'm curious to see what happens in Dane County in this election, if they can get the college students out to vote again.
Hmm. Jeff in Madison. Hi, Jeff.
Good morning. Bothered by Romney's comment about the 47%, which translates into 76 million households who paid no federal income taxes. The truth is, Romney doesn't know who those people are, and none of us do. We can only try to estimate who they might be. My guess would be that a substantial number of them, probably 50% of them, are from the 104 million people who did not even vote. There were 70 million who voted for Obama, 60 million for McCain, and 104 million did not vote out of the 234 million adults. So I just have to believe that a large number of the 104 million that did not vote are people who pay no taxes.
Is that true, Dante?
That's an excellent point. I don't have the exact breakdown on that, but studies would suggest that's true. Actually,
mm-hmm.
that often it is poor voters who tend to be less engaged and less likely to vote.
5% were Obama people.
I'm sorry, Jeff. So, you'll have to continue. What were you saying?
I'm sorry. My guess would be of those who pay no taxes, probably 50% of them did not vote. 25% of them voted for McCain. Retirees, veterans, and then 25% voted for Obama. That's probably the best estimate we could make as to who these 47% are. So So Romney is way off when he tries to equate the 47% as being 100% Obama people.
Mm-hmm.
I would never try to break down like the actual percentage, but of who did what without something a little more statistically, you know, sound, without real numbers. But I would tend to agree with. I mean, there's no question that the 47% number is just wrong. I mean, in terms of not whether or not, you know, as one caller mentioned, not about the tax returns that didn't pay taxes, but about the way those people vote. There's just absolutely no question that what he said was fundamentally incorrect.
All right. I was going to take another call, but I better not, because then I'll get frustrated when we don't have enough time. So, Dante, thank you so much for being with us. What are you looking at now?
I'm actually going to write specifically today about Romney's likability numbers. And actually, it's really interesting. They have not moved even after the convention, and he's got a huge, huge problem there. It's big, and he hasn't been able to overcome it. It's interesting. And then we'll have some more Pew data that we're going to look at next week, be able to get inside of a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's hard to become likable. How do you become likable? I mean, that's a big thing to do, isn't it?
I mean, ideally what you do is, you know, they had this convention to reintroduce him. There's always this talk. I don't know. I don't think American voters aren't easily programmed.
Right.
And I think that, like, well, they were going to reintroduce him and people were going to see him in a different light. And the numbers suggest, at least post-convention, that those figures haven't moved at all.
Yeah. Dante, thank you so much. Dante Chinney, editor of Patchwork Nation, our guest this hour. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning and Brett Jaspers, who produced this program. Jonathan Kozel will be with us right after we take a look at the latest news. So please stay with us. Thanks for listening this hour.